is 6 a.m.
This is CKUW 95.9 FM, streaming at ckuw.ca. We hope you've enjoyed listening to us, and stay tuned. CKUW is managed by the Winnipeg Campus Community Radio Society in accordance with CRTC and Industry Canada rules and regulations. As a non-for-profit station, CKUW is a member of the National Campus Community Radio Association and adheres to their statement of principles to provide an alternative voice. CKUW operates on the frequency of 95.9 MHz on the FM band with 450 watts effective radiated power, or ERP. Our transmitter is located at 7 Evergreen Place in Osborne Village. Programming originates from our downtown studios at the University of Winnipeg in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. We would like to hear from you and welcome your ideas to improve listening, which will be heard on CKUW in the years to come. Address your comments and suggestions to CKUW 95.9 FM, room 4CM11, 515 Portage Avenue, Winnipeg, Manitoba, R3B2E9. You can also call us at 204-786-9782 or email us at ckuw@uwinnipeg.ca. This is Kent Davies speaking for the Board of Directors, staff, and volunteers of CKUW 95.9 FM. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for more great community radio.
This is CKUW 95.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Winnipeg, Manitoba, on occupied Anishinaabe Aking, the homeland of the Métis and the historical territory of the Nahiyawak and the Nakota.
Morning, friends. I'm Ron Robinson.
And I'm Carol.
We are here. We have battled our way here. All right, we drove. We're here live for you from the next 2 hours, 6 till 8, here on the cleverly named Saturday Morning Show. This half hour, Carol will give us the weather, in which case I'll probably go on the roof looking for ancient radio waves.
You can count on that.
You can count on that. Yes. Nice review in today's Free Press of Murder on the Orient Express. Talk a bit about that. Got the book pages as well. A little bit of poetry for you. And, of course, advice from Dear Mary. They're like little wood choppers, aren't they? Little machine wood choppers are whacking away, whacking away, whacking away in our theme there for you. It's 2 minutes after six. Carol and Kevin, you look to me like you were suggesting that you had the weather.
I do have the weather. Excuse me. And there's a little icon above the minus 23 number. And it's blue, and it's got, like, blowing snow. And actually, the conditions say drifting snow.
Blowing snow. There you are, drifting,
right.
Yes.
Yep. So, barometric pressure, 102.9 and rising. Humidity, just 75%. Well, it's cold out. It's dry. Wind coming from the north-northwest at 34 and a wind chill of minus 37.
Yes, and it felt like it.
Yes. Yeah, we the little bit that we did walk, we could feel it.
I guess it was getting the car ready to go that suggested
to
me.
Yes, that's true, too.
Yes, this is, I've made a wise choice here.
Yeah. Mix of sun and cloud today, 30% chance of flurries early this morning. We can attest to that. The front porch was covered in snow. Yep. Wind coming from the northwest at 40, gusting to 60, and then from the west at 20 around lunchtime. High, minus 18. Wind chill, minus 36 this morning and minus 29 this afternoon. Altogether, risk of frostbite. And just in case you're interested, the UV index is one. That's low.
It's good to know, Carol. Yes. Good to know. What did Mae West say? I used to be called Snow White, but I drifted.
Yes, that's right.
Which is what
that's
we have today.
On
6:04. Quick look at sports for you then. Hockey, the NHL, the Jets are flying after being grounded for so long. I think 4 wins in a row. So they play Toronto Maple Leafs tonight at 6. The American Hockey League, the Manitoba Moose, took on the Laval Rocket last night. Moose won 2-1 in a shootout. Same again today at 2. Professional Women's Hockey League, Minnesota, New York last night. Minnesota won 3-2 in overtime. So today, Vancouver and Toronto at 2. Sunday, Montreal and New York at 1. Belfast Giants are doing a hearing impairment fan survey, quote, to understand their experience on game nights, says here.
Cool.
Well, I have seen Winnipeg kids wearing noise-canceling headphones, don't you know it?
Yes, yes. Well, it can get very loud.
Basketball, Toronto Raptors played the LA Clippers last night. Clippers won 121 to 117. Now, the Winnipeg Sea Bears schedule is out, talking basketball. First game is Saturday, May the 9th in Edmonton. Their first home game will be Tuesday, May the 19th, the Scarborough Shooting Stars. And the Under-18 Women's World Hockey Championship goes on today. I see Sweden will play the U.S. at 2 p.m., according to the Free Press. I take it to be that our time. Canada plays Czechia in the semifinals at 5:30.
Okay.
Turning then to your easy listening hit parade of the 40s and the 50s. January 28th, 1957, Patsy Cline. An attractive gal from the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia sang Walking After Midnight on Earth, the Godfrey's Talent Scouts, and won the competition. And the quote, she brought the audience to their feet, recalled lyricist Don Hecht, probably put a tear in his eye. TV exposure created a national clamor, American spelling, for a Patsy Cline recording of the song. Decca rushed one out, remained a bestseller through 1957 and into 1958.
I go out walking after midnight out in the I'm always walking after midnight, searching for you. I walk for miles along the highway. Well, that's just my way of saying I love you. I'm always walking after midnight.
Saturday morning show there, Patsy Cline, from your easy listening hit parade, the 40s and the 50s. As I say, a big hit, 57 through 58. Before her untimely death in an airplane crash in Tennessee, that happened in 1963, she had become a major figure in country music. Many hits to her credit among them, well, we know them. Crazy, She's Got You, Sweet Dreams of You, and I Fall to Pieces. Named to the Country Music Hall of Fame in 1973, at 9 minutes after six. Spot of poetry for you before we turn to
okay.
A bit of music, and we'll take a look at
the Poetry Day
Free
today?
Press. Yes, it's Poetry Day today.
I see. Okay.
here on the Saturday Morning Show. I think I got this at the British Library. Lifelines, Poets for Oxfam, edited by Todd Swift. So 69 of the English-speaking world's most acclaimed poets, so says Oxfam, each performs a piece selected from their own repertoire.
My name is Danny Absey, and at one time I practiced as a doctor, and here's one of the medical poems I wrote. It's called The Stethoscope. Through it, over young women's tense abdomens, I have heard the sound of creation, and in a dead man's chest, the silence before creation began. Should I pray, therefore, hold this instrument in awe and aloft a procession of banners, hang this thing in the interior of a cold, mushroom-dark church? Should I kneel before it, chant an apothem from a small text, mimic priest or rabbi, the swaying noises of religious men? Never. Yet I could praise it. I should by doing so celebrate my own ears, by praising them praise speech at midnight when men become philosophers, laughter of the sane and insane, night cries of injured creatures, wide-eyed or blind, moonlight sonatas on a needle, lovers with doves in their throats, the wind traveling from where it began.
The stethoscope.
Wow.
Before that, at least put their ear up against your chest, I suppose. And if you watch Call the Midwife.
Yes.
They use sort of a horn-like thing.
Oh, right. Yes.
6:11. So from Lifelines, Poets for Oxfam, poets had donated their time free, waived all of their publishing and performance rights.
Wow.
All profits went towards Oxfam's work in more than 60 countries. At 6:12, on this day, we'll see if our CD player will play this. It's had a few hiccups. On this day in 1974, Asylum Records released Court and Spark, Joni Mitchell's sixth studio album, which included Free Man in Paris and this.
Help me, I think I'm falling in love again. When I get that crazy feeling, I know I'm in trouble again. I'm in trouble, 'cause you're a rambler and a gambler and a sweet talking ladies' man. You're loving.
Was her biggest seller. As I say, had that.
I'm not surprised.
Free Man in Paris. I see I got that CD from Victoria.
Oh.
Where we used to visit Lyle's, we used to visit Ditch. I'm not sure who's left, Carol. Who's left in Victoria selling
CDs? One of those guys
CDs.
Closed.
Well, they may be all gone. Are we going to be the last people playing CDs in a small dark room? Hello?
Possibly.
At 6:16.
Because we also have albums and cassettes. Who plays those? Well, people play albums again.
That's true. There was a great comeback. I'm standing on my chair now, and I am reaching above to push the cupboard door above my head open.
I'll help you.
As we look and search through the universe and beyond, the radio waves go on forever.
3 days from now, after half a century, in the service of our country, I shall lay down the responsibilities of office as, in traditional and solemn ceremony, the authority of the presidency is vested in my successor. This evening, I come to you with a message of leave-taking and farewell, and to share a few final thoughts with you, my countrymen. Like every other citizen, I wish the new president and all who will labor with him Godspeed. I pray that the coming years will be blessed with peace and prosperity for all. We now stand 10 years past the midpoint of a century that has witnessed 4 major wars among great nations. 3 of these involved our own country. Despite these holocausts, America is today the strongest, the most influential, and most productive nation in the world. Understandably proud of this preeminence, we yet realize that America's leadership and prestige depend not merely upon our unmatched material progress, riches, and military strength, but on how we use our power in the interests of world peace and human betterment. Crises there will continue to be. In meeting them, whether foreign or domestic, great or small, there is a recurring temptation to feel that some spectacular and costly action could become the miraculous solution to all current difficulties. A huge increase in newer elements of our defenses. Development of unrealistic programs to cure every ill in agriculture. A dramatic expansion in basic and applied research. These and many other possibilities, each possibly promising in itself, may be suggested as the only way to the road we wish to travel. But each proposal must be weighed in the light of a broader consideration, the need to maintain balance in and among national programs. A vital element in keeping the peace is our military establishment. Our arms must be mighty, ready for instant action, so that no potential aggressor may be tempted to risk his own destruction. Our military organization today bears little relation to that known of any of my predecessors in peacetime, or indeed by the fighting men of World War II or Korea. Until the latest of our world conflicts, the United States had no armaments industry. American makers of plowshares could, with time and as required, make swords as well. But we can no longer risk emergency improvisation of national defense. We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions. Added to this, 3.5 million men and women are directly engaged in the defense establishment. We annually spend on military security alone more than the net income of all United States corporations. Now, this conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources, and livelihood are all involved. So is the very structure of our society. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. Today, the solitary inventor, tinkering in his shop, has been overshadowed by task forces of scientists in laboratories and testing fields. In the same fashion, the free university, historically the fountainhead of free ideas and scientific discovery, has experienced a revolution in the conduct of research. Partly because of the huge costs involved, a government contract becomes virtually a substitute for intellectual curiosity. For every old blackboard, there are now hundreds of new electronic computers. The prospect of domination of the nation's scholars by federal employment, project allocations, and the power of money is ever present and is gravely to be regarded. Yet in holding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific, technological elite. As we peer into society's future, we, you and I, and our government must avoid the impulse to live only for today, plundering for our own ease and convenience the precious resources of tomorrow. We cannot mortgage the material assets of our grandchildren without risking the loss also of their political and spiritual heritage.
Ancient radio waves. Blue Sachange. The voice of Dwight D. Eisenhower there.
Right.
As he said goodbye, having served as President of the United States of America. At 6:23, Carol McKibben, jumble yes. there, a jumble in front of you?
I jumble, do have a jumble. Me? I got it right quick, so you should be able
well,
to.
Well, of course,
it's
yes,
not a word
absolutely.
We use every day not anymore.
It's a common word, found around the house, apparently not.
No, okay. no. L-O-D-L-R.
The dollar? No.
How many letters does dollar have?
Not enough, apparently.
Too many.
Too many letters.
Oh, dear, it is early, isn't it? L-O-D-L-R.
How droll. Boy, oh boy, that's obscure.
See, dollar is something
feeling,
you still use.
I'm feeling droll on the inside, Carol. Yes. I'm not showing it at all.
Well, I know you use that word every Christmas on CTV when you're reading
How droll.
The night before Christmas.
For the comment on Santa, no doubt, I suppose.
Yes.
His droll little, yes, whatever. At 6:24...
I didn't say he memorized it, folks, just that he...
We flash back now
does
to Victorian times with
yes.
Mary Lou Fallis from her CD, Prima Donna and a Moose.
Oh,
19th century solo song, brief, simple, and entertaining indeed. And this morning, we have for you a song which was used to sell and promote... And it was called Let Us Live to Die. Let Us Die to Live. That's it. Only it's D-Y-E. Get my drift?
We dye to live.
You see, it's a promotion to bring in your clothes and we'll dye them to the color you want.
Oh, okay. I was thinking it was hair. All right.
Mary Lou Fallis, then.
Okay.
Let us sing to you a song. We will not detain you long. Your attention we will very soon repay. If our skill you'll only try, all your garments we will dye and make them look as bright as a summer's day. Come, come, come to Parker's Dye Works. Do not delay another day. For in every shade or hue, we can match your colors true and we'll charge you very little for our pay. Any time at your command, we are always close at hand, for our agencies are counted by the score.
By the score.
You can call,
or we will send,
to your orders we'll attend, and return them soon unto your very door.
Come, come, come to Parker's Dye Works. Do not delay another day, for in every shade or hue, we can match your colors true, and we'll charge you very little.
Every word's as true as gospel we have said. If you've anything to die, then to please you we will try. For we live to die, and dying earn our bread.
Come, come, come to Parker's Dye Works. Do not delay,
delay another day. Day. Not delay.
For we share on you, we can match your colors true, and we'll charge you very little.
Thank you, Mary Lou. Yes. As I say, it was popular to be sung around the piano, and so it was realized it was a great marketing opportunity to Canadian businesses. R. Parker & Company Dye Works published one of the earliest music jingles, We Dye to Live, 1890. Cheaply produced song sheets distributed with the hope of them being performed around the parlor piano. Did you have a parlor piano?
We had a piano in our living room. I don't know you'd call our living room a parlor.
And did you gather around the parlor piano and sing and play? Have jolly times?
Well...
droll songs to be heard?
My mom would play the piano, but it wasn't like... I don't remember having the whole family standing around the piano singing along.
I love a piano.
I remember her and I.
Yes.
I remember her and I and my sister... I remember
yes.
her and I and my dad.
Yes.
But I don't remember the whole family.
And what were you singing, Carol? Were they Presbyterian hymns?
Well, if it was dad, yeah, probably he was practicing for church.
Right.
But otherwise, she had this big book of American, well, it was called American Book of Folk Songs, something like that. And
when John Henry was a little baby. Maybe not.
Well, I can't remember that. But it had... like British Grenadiers and stuff like that in it
yes,
as well.
Yes, absolutely.
So, yeah. So it wasn't just, you know, it had Green Grow the Rushes, though. I enjoyed singing that a lot because so, like, oh, ten of, yeah, it's like 12 Days of Christmas, you know, you go on and on.
But,
yeah.
But the British Grenadiers, some talk of Alexander and some of Hercules, of Hector and Lysander, and such great names as these.
I don't remember singing that around the piano, but she also had another book that was more kiddie stuff, and it had Polly Put the Kettle On and things
tea.
Like that. Yeah.
Hmm. All righty. At 6:29. Well, as I say, We Dye to Live. You recognize the tune there, yes. Laudatory text set to the popular Tramp, 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 right?
Right.
Tramp, Tramp, Tramp along the highway. Yeah, by American composer George F. Root. In this arrangement, you can hear the dye process accompanied by wash tub and scrub board. Thank you. Prima Donna and a Moose, that's from Sikora's as well, which is now long gone.
Oh.
I guess they were they in Vancouver?
Yes.
Seems to be, yes, on Hastings Street.
They were out of stock when we were in there, and you had to write, you asked him if he'd order it in
and
then
did.
Send it.
And delivered. They did. Yes.
Yep.
I was impressed. They knew what I was talking about and knew what to do.
Yep.
Yes, competence. It's It's a delight when you find it, Carol, and so disturbing when you don't, Ted. 629. We'll save the book pages for a little later then.
Okay.
As we turn to Mary from the pages of the Spectator magazine from 24th of May, 2008. Dear Mary, your problem solved. Dear Mary, I treated four friends to a trip to the Far East. Mm. On the way back, there was a cock-up at the airport with an overbooked plane, and our party had to be put up for the night in a magnificent, brackets, hotel. As a stickler for standards, I wrote to the airline to complain. I was quite satisfied to receive flight vouchers for £500 in compensation. I was amazed, but one of my guests boasted to me later that he had followed my lead and that he, too, had received £500 in flight vouchers. Do you agree, Mary, that it was incumbent on my guest to pass these vouchers on to me? It was no great hardship for him to spend the night in a five-star hotel. He was unemployed at the time, and he would not have been on the flight at all had it not been for my largesse. What was the etiquette in this situation? Would you rule, please, Mary?
Oh, dear,
well,
dear,
Mary has
dear.
An answer, yes, of course.
Oh, yay, yay.
You can count on Mary. She says, You did not personally suffer five delays. You only suffered one delay. Your guest also suffered one delay, and he was, theoretically, inconvenienced by it, even if he had nothing better to do than stay in a magnificent hotel for one extra night. In some ways, it would have been rather insulting if he had offered you his vouchers, with the suggestion that you would be small time enough to accept them. Some people are more opportunistic than others, and it is best to rise above these money matters. Having been so generous in the first place, don't spoil your reputation by letting the grudge rankle now. Etiquette guidance from dear Mary. My dear, that's what they would have done in 2008. I can remember coming back from England and not being able to fly. We were offered a hotel.
Yes.
And a chance to fly anywhere in the world that Canadian Airlines flew.
That's right.
And I got on the phone immediately. The chap said, here, use this phone. And said to my brother Jack, if Jennifer misses one day of school, we get to fly anywhere in the world.
Yeah, we had your niece with us.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so he said, sure. So on the plane home, Jennifer said, gosh, Uncle Ron and Aunt Carol, I guess we're going back to England next year, are we? No, Jennifer, you're not going. Well, you can find your own way. We went to Hong Kong.
We went to Hong Kong. We had the opportunity to fly anywhere in the world that they flew. And so I found the furthest possible place that I'd like to go. And it was Hong Kong.
It was right up there with, I'd like to get you on a slow boat to China. Because we did go to China.
But she did. Jennifer.
Did go back.
Did go back to London and enjoyed herself.
Yes, she did.
Yeah.
At 6:33, I think, I promised the book reviews, but I think we'll turn to the Turner Classic Movie Channel first.
Okay.
Music. 2:45 today, Operation Crossbow from 1965 in the Turner Classic Movie Channel, directed by Michael Anderson, Sophia Loren, George Peppard, Trevor Howard, thriller. Slow started with the review, but World War II, sort of precursor to The Guns of Navarone, that kind of thriller. 7 o'clock tonight, The Naked Spur, westerns then, back on, right, 1953. James Stewart, Janet Leigh, Robert Ryan, Captive Outlaw versus Bounty Hunter. Tonight, Term of Trial from 1962, Laurence Olivier, Simon Signoret, introducing Sarah Miles, schoolgirl obsessed with her teacher. That'll be repeated at 9 a.m., so it's the noir film for tonight. Sunday, 2:30 p.m., King's Row from 1942, Anne Sheridan, Ronald Reagan, Passion, Hate, Thwarted Love, Voting Patterns, Small Town. I may have thrown in Voting Patterns, I'm not sure. 9 p.m., Graphic Language, the movie Coma. Doctor's investigation reveals sinister conspiracy. At 11 o'clock, the silent movie Sunday night will be The Love Light from 1921. Mary Pickford, Canada's sweetheart, yes. Girl torn between her love for a German spy and her sense of patriotism. Well, I certainly hope how that turned out, Beth. Mm-hmm. Behind us, the Western music, just to remind you of The Naked Spur from 1953, is How the West Was Won. And at 6:36, I found a CD, because it wasn't sent to me, I don't think. Catherine Penfold, what she's been up to, still singing, 2019, which took me back in memory days when I was at CBC, and she lived out of town.
Yes.
And she and her mom and dad came into town to talk to us.
Wow.
About music and making music and recording and maybe being a professional singer, because my producer, Jan Harding, was earning a dollar or two as
on
a singer
side.
As well, so I thought
yep.
I had something to offer to
so
her.
So just, wait a minute, how old was she? She came in with her mom and dad.
Well, you'll hear it in her voice, which I'm going to play for you. She must have been 13 or 14, I would
think.
I thought
she was 12.
Could have been 12.
Yeah.
Well, give a listen, see if it sounds like a 12-year-old or a 13-year-old you.
Right.
This from a CD that she sent to me. It says, two songs for Ron. A few songs for Ron. Two.
Aww.
Sharpens iron.
two samples of Catherine Penfold for you there. That last cut, say from what, 2019, I think, from a CD called Sweetest Thing. You Know the Way I Feel, which I think she wrote. And then previous to that, we heard together lyrics by Catherine Penfold, and as well as Candace Hoppner and Bethan Penfold, music by Catherine Penfold. So she played the
piano
and recorded and duplicated by Rural Route Recording Studios. Sound by her dad.
Yes.
Martin Penfold.
Yeah.
Keep it in house.
That's so sweet.
Yeah. Family that plays together. Yes, at 6:42. 6:42.
Hey, I'm John Anderson, rock historian and author of Four Strong Winds, and you're listening to CKUW-FM.
95.9 in Winnipeg. 6:40, just ahead of Comedy Spot. We turn
A
warning to the boys and girls. The two CD sets, Behind Bars, 40 Tales of Prisons, Jail Breaks, and Death on Two CDs. I do like on two CDs. See if we can find this for you, yes? I think it's Frankie Lane this morning.
Bullet in my shoulder. Blood running down my vest. 20 in the posse, and they're never gonna let me rest. Killed him with my bare hands for the girl I loved that night. Jed's brother was out to get me. He's coming with a gang. But I'd rather shoot it out by God than let him watch me hang. Bullet in my shoulder. Blood running down my vest. 20 in the posse. Choice, but was she really worth it? Well, I guess I'll never know. She'll be drinking someone else's rye when I'm 6 feet below. Bullet in my shoulder, blood running down my vest. 20 in the posse, and then they're never gonna let me rest till I became a wanted man. I never even owned a gun, but now they hunt me like mountain cat, and I'm always,
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 always on the run. A wanted man, a wanted man on the run.
Frankie Lane from 1961 or so with Wanted Man. Now, boys and girls, if the posse is 20 of them, and they're doing 10 miles an hour going east, and Frankie's going the other way, 10 miles an hour going. Remember those kind of school questions?
Yes.
Yeah.
I could figure them out in my head.
Right.
But I couldn't figure out what the formula was supposed to be. So when they'd ask you on a test, I'd be writing out, in English.
Right.
The whole answer was.
My preference was if the trolley bus is going down Portage Avenue west, and the wind and the snow is blowing at 30 miles an hour east.
Yes.
How long will it take for, and you go, I can get a pencil and paper, and then you realize it's a trolley bus. There is no exhaust. Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's too early for the weather, isn't it? There should be. Let me know if there's a change. As I'm reading the liner notes from Behind Bars, the blues and country music both have many major themes in common. Love, moonshine whiskey, fast cars, fast women. When two or more of these factors combine, bingo and a bango and a bongo, tends to steer us inevitably in the territory that Dostoevsky once famously defined as crime. and Punishment.
Oh, right.
Just about, should have played the Dragnet theme song right there, I suppose. 646, looking at the Free Press book pages. Lovely photo, but that old funny color that you got through the 50s, when either something had been, too many of them had been done, it's a postcard, obviously. That kind of washed out color, because it's used to let us know, there's a new book, The Finest Hotel in Kabul, A People's History of Afghanistan by Lise Doucette.
Oh.
Reviewed today in the Winnipeg Free Press, Alan Lane. So that's Penguin, isn't it? Alan Lane?
Yeah. Alan, yes.
The Finest Hotel Penguin. In Kabul. Now, this is their latest book. Of course, Canadian journalist, BBC correspondent, set out to point a spotlight on the history of Afghanistan through extraordinary people who might normally be overlooked in the tomes of history. I'm reading a book like that myself at the moment. You know, you think it's always the great people and great battles. No, no, that's one way to look at history. Anyways, through the backdrop of Kabul's Intercontinental Hotel, which is the most storied and fabulous hotel in the city, she takes a look at the voices who worked and lived in the hotel between 1971 and 2021. That's a 50-year expanse of time that bears witness to crowns, coups, communists, the Taliban, Western puppets, return of the Taliban. So Matt Henderson reviewed it, and he says it's a testament to the astonishing resistance and resilience of Afghans. Reminds us that experiences of ordinary people illuminate a deeper truth. Humanity is best understood not through grand events, but through the daily acts of those who endure them. That's the big book on the first page, today's Winnipeg Free Press. Here's a wacky book for you, titled, and it's all about the title, A Sociopath's Guide to a Successful Marriage. So needless to say, he'd never done any writing before, but once the title came out, he was constantly pursued by film production people wanting to immediately grab a hold of the book and see if they could,
right.
So the review is by Lawrence Broadhurst, and he says, while A Sociopath's Guide was perhaps doomed to fall well short of its quippy title and booming cover, it is, for the most part, what it announces itself brazenly to be. Any cliches are charmingly self-aware, and Lala is a dynamite hostess. The investment of reading time will pay off in a quick, if not lingering, manner. Today's Winnipeg Free Press book pages in. And see, the indie booksellers have been chosen to jury the Giller this time.
Oh, interesting.
Forget authors. No, no, it'll be independent booksellers, including...
Yes, McNally Robinson,
yes, McNally Robinson bookseller, co-owner, Chris Hall.
Yes.
Among the seven jurors representing bookstores, Toronto, Atlantic Canada, Northwest Territories, BC. As well, I'm looking at Ben Sigurdsson's column here now, Paper Chase from today. The Wild and Wonderful Words reading series kicks off Wednesday at Sukrim's Brewing Company, 479B Warsaw Avenue. Slate of writers ready to share their work. Things get underway at 7 p.m. Admission is free. The event is all ages. I think you'll be able to have a little imbibe something there while you listen.
Maybe.
As well... Crash of the Heavens, Wartime Rescue Mission, movingly recalled, reviewed by Graham Boyer. The remarkable story of Hannah Senish and the only military mission to rescue Europe's Jews during World War II. So reviewed in today's Winnipeg Free Press. With its emphasis on the doomed Hannah, the story the author tells is necessarily sad, but his account of the politics of the mission shows how the British and the Jews in Palestine could cooperate to realize their respective aims. Today's Winnipeg Free Press book page is then at 6:50. A treasure found?
Yes.
In a, probably into the music.
Right.
Box set of Elgar... And this is actually Volume 3, The Complete Electrical Recordings.
Electrical.
So we're going way back here. This 1928-29, I think, from the Elgar edition then. This, which, good question. What did we say? The only thing I must say was difficult to figure out who was wailing away on their violins. We probably put it down into the New Symphony Orchestra, did we?
Yes.
All right. Recorded then November the 8th, 1929. A little bit of... couple of interludes from Falstaff.
Okay.
We'll have the dream interlude and the dream interlude part two. ¶¶ that's the kind of dream that would wake you up, though. I think what we want is Falstaff himself, yes?
Right.
So why don't we move from the concert overture for François to the dream interlude I mentioned. Shall we? We won't put them to sleep so they miss all the rest of... Plus, I forgot to play the comedy. Because I got a little note here about Molly Berg, who was... ended up going on radio, and Gertrude Berg was her name, but she was best known as Molly Goldberg, and did a... from 1931 on, and then into TV as well, although TV couldn't match the success of her radio show. I've got a LP with a Gertrude Berg here as How to Be a Jewish Mother.
So you want to know how to be a Jewish mother. Very nice. I can remember when people knew this without taking lessons, but it seems times have changed. All right, never mind. I'll be happy to teach you whatever secrets I know. The important thing, after all, is that you should get a proper education. So to help me teach you, here is a young man who thinks he knows more about this subject than a mother.
Thank you. How to be a Jewish mother. Properly practiced, Jewish motherhood is an art, a complex network of subtle and highly sophisticated techniques.
Absolutely.
Master these techniques and you will be an unqualified success. The envy of your friends, and the backbone of your family.
But fail to master these techniques, and you hasten the black day when you find your children can get along without you. So pay attention.
Lesson one, the basic techniques of Jewish motherhood. You will be called upon to function as a philosopher on two distinct types of occasions. One,
when anything bad happens.
Two.
When anything good happens.
When anything bad happens, point out the fortunate aspects of the situation. Thus.
Ma. Ma.
What's the commotion?
The bad boys ran off with my hat.
The bad boys ran off with your hat?
Yeah.
Well, you should be grateful they didn't also cut your throat. Maybe next time you'll know better than to fool with roughnecks.
When anything good happens, point out the unfortunate aspects of the situation.
So that the evil eye shouldn't suspect things are going too well.
Thus.
Ma! Ma!
So what's the trouble now?
The youth group raffle. I won a Pontiac convertible.
You won a Pontiac convertible. Very nice. The insurance alone is going to send us to the poorhouse.
Making guilt work. Underlying all techniques of Jewish motherhood is the ability to plant, cultivate, and harvest guilt. Control guilt, and you control the child. There is an old saying,
spank your child every day. If you don't know what he's done to deserve the spanking, he will.
A slight modification gives us the Jewish mother's cardinal rule.
Let your child hear you sigh every day. If you don't know what he's done to make you suffer, he will.
This is the basic facial expression. Learn it well. Practice it before a mirror several times a day. If anyone should catch you at it and ask what you are doing, say,
oh, I'm fine. It's nothing at all. It'll go away.
This is the basic tone of voice. Practice drills. Give your son Marvin two sport shirts as a present. The first time he wears one of them, look at him sadly and say in your basic tone of voice,
the other one you didn't like?
Lesson 2, the Jewish mother's guide to food distribution. Just as Mother Nature abhors a vacuum, the Jewish mother abhors an empty mouth.
Very important.
At mealtimes, be sure there is a continuous flow of food from stove to platter to plate to mouth. If anyone should be foolish enough to decline a particular dish, potatoes, for example, proceed as follows.
Harry, what do you mean no potatoes? You think I'm trying to poison you? All right, take only a sliver of the potatoes.
Okay, but remember, only a sliver.
You may now proceed to fill his plate with potatoes. When the last crumb has been cleared from all plates by means of pointed references to privation in Europe, you are ready for the real test of your art.
Harry, I can tell that you're ready for a third helping of chicken.
Believe me, Sylvia, if I took one more piece of chicken, I would sprout feathers.
See, Harry doesn't like the way I cook chicken.
Gertrude Berg in How to Be a Jewish Mother.
Your mother did that once. She gave your brother two ties for Christmas.
One was blue and one was brown.
Yes.
So he wore the blue tie.
Yes.
And she said,
what's wrong with the brown one?
That's it, exactly. Now, he could have pulled a dally and worn both ties, I suppose, at the same time. Yeah. Gertrude Berg, born Tilly Edelstein, 1899 to 1968.